What is your major malfunction, Numbnut? Didn't Mommy and Daddy show you enough attention when you were a child?
And you have meddled with the primal forces of nature. And you will atone.
Oh, yeah, who's your daddy? Who's your daddy? Oh, shit.
Real Princess has arrived, and other people have remembered, and they come back to us and they say, hey, don't worry, don't be afraid, ever, because this is just real.
The truth shall set you free, but first, it will piss you off. Naughty by Nature, with Nature Boy. Interesting people, with interesting ideas, for an interesting conversation.
What is an anarchist? When you think of an anarchist, what comes to your mind? Some mass crusty punk busting out windows or beating up on some innocent bystander? Or a group of people releasing baby sea turtles in the ocean at a marine sanctuary? Personally, mine was the latter. Then I started learning about anarchism. This year I'm going to an event in Acapulco, a convention, if you will, of anarchists, believe it or not, called Anarchapulco. I have no expectations of what I'm going to find or who I'm going to meet, but the one thing that I do know, it's going to be interesting. There's no better person to answer the question of what is an anarchist than today's guest. He is the MC and host of Anarchapulco this year, as well as an author, and he is the host of the Macroaggressions podcast and co-host of the Union of the Unwanted. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show the amazing Charlie Robinson.
Thank you for having me. Boy, I sound so important when you said all that stuff. I'm just a dirty anarchist who thinks that the government is terrible, thinks that we can do it a lot better than them, and I don't want them sticking their nose in my business. But other than that, I think you're going into Anarchapulco with the right intentions. Whatever happens, happens. I'm not going to go in and drag any preconceived ideas. I did that. The first year I was there, I thought, well, you know, maybe we're going to, you know, where is the Molotov cocktail throwing contest? I seem to be late for it. Never found it, you know, they just never had it. And it wasn't that. It was about, you know, taking self-ownership, about being responsible, about not outsourcing your critical thinking to the state or to the media or places like that, or even to the established medical community. There were a lot of people that had been burned in the past, had come together at these conferences to learn more about what's really going on. And so I think that what is reasonable for you to expect is that by the time you leave the conference after a week, you will realize that you have something that money can't buy. You have experiences, you have contacts, you have friends, international people that you've met during this. It will open doors that you didn't even know were there. You will meet people that you didn't know existed. And I always leave Anarchapulco feeling really grateful that I was there and that I had these experiences, and also simultaneously pretty sad that I have to go back to the real world, because I know that a lot of people don't think the way these people think. They don't have the capacity to solve these problems or look at this from another angle, or to remove the media component from this. And they can't help but see the world the way the American government or the corporate press wants them to see it. And I'm over that. I'm past that. I'm tired of it. Tired of being lied to. And so I appreciate these conferences because, you know, the people there are interested in giving you their perspective on the way things work. They're not there to sell you necessarily on their way of thinking. It doesn't need a sales pitch. You simply listen to them talk about the way they see the world, the products that they're building, or the services that they're offering, And they just inherently sound like a better option than what the state gives you. And I learned a valuable lesson the first time I was at Anarchapulco, when I was talking to a guy who was a founder of a homeschooling network. And I was talking to him about public school system in America. And he said, don't ever call it public schools. Always call it government schools. If you call it government schools, it sounds worse. It sounds more realistic. It sounds like what it is. The public school is a government school. But public school sounds like it's open to everyone. And government school sounds exactly like what it is. It's an indoctrination camp. And I was like, wow. From that moment on, I've changed my relationship with how I refer to things as well. So I'm excited for you to come to this event. I think you're going to love it. I'm not going to sell it. I'm not going to set any sort of expectations in your head, except that it's unlike any place you've ever gone. And the people that are there are some of the most beautiful and amazing and brilliant and creative minds I have ever been around. And once you go, you'll always want to go back.
I have a feeling, and I've said this, I said it to a few people, but I think it's going to be a game changer. I think I'm going to go down there and come back a changed person, whether it be major or minor, but I'm not going to be the same nature boy that wandered in there as the nature boy that comes back here. And that's what I'm looking at. I'm looking forward to meeting people with different ideas, interesting people, maybe some people that could help me learn how to navigate through this fucking crazy time we're going through. I mean, we're truly living in a time of universal deceit. There's no doubt about it. Orwell called it dead on with the mainstream media. Every time I turn it on, because I've studied a little bit of psychology, advertising, propaganda, you know, Edward Bernays the whole time. Every time I'll see a clip or turn on a news broadcast, no matter if it's a local newscast or if it's Rachel Maddow, very talented woman, highly intelligent, but goddamn, what a sellout bitch. Can't believe people actually take her seriously, but I know people that, oh, she would never lie to me. And I know other people that are like, Sean Hannity's a good American boy. He'd never lie to me. He's telling me the exact goddamn truth. Them fucking pinkos and China and all them trannies are going out and kill us. Trump's going to save us. You know, so I see both sides of it. And I see propaganda everywhere. It drives me nuts that the normies, my friends, can't see it. And every time I try to tell them, you know, I've got a few friends that if I present it right, they'll listen to me. But there's so many people that I know that you either get that, you know, blank stare, or not steroid, but fluoride stare. You know what I mean? Or, oh, you're just one of them conspiracy theorists, aren't you? Yeah, I heard about you. Rachel Maddow, John Hannity told me all about you. I bet you're a vaxxer, aren't you? You know, you're fucking killing granny, and you're the reason why I had to stay locked down in my house and my crazy old lady for 2 fucking years. You're to blame. This type of attitude. So,
yeah,
you know.
We're working against a lot of conditioning, a lot of programming that comes to people, and those people that you described, those are my friends too. Mm-hmm. You know, these are people that are good people.
Very good people.
They're only getting one source of information. They don't even know the source. I mean, they don't even recognize that Sean Hannity's wearing a CIA lapel pin while he's giving those presentations. And they don't know that Rachel Maddow was a Rhodes Scholar, and they don't know what that means. Oh, Bill Clinton was a Rhodes Scholar. It means that they're smart Democrats, right?
No.
Well, I mean, can we talk about what the Cecil Rhodes was doing with the Round Table and the Fabian Socialists and the wolf in sheep's clothing? I mean, their logo is a fucking wolf in sheep's clothing. For God's sake, people, they're telling you what they want to do. They're infiltrators.
Yes.
They take you to the UK. They put you through a program. They teach you how to infiltrate the country from the inside and destroy it. So when you hear Rachel Maddow and you know she's getting paid $30,000 a night to do her propaganda routine, you understand crime pays, mm-hmm. pays very well.
Yes, it does.
If you know the right people, you can't fail. Mm-hmm. They'll make sure that you fail upward. In the case of Rachel Maddow or all of these diversity hires that are on MSNBC that shouldn't have jobs and just keep finding themselves with jobs, or even if you work in the sports world and you're you're just like out there as a racist, like Bomani Jones or Jemele Hill, you keep getting deal after deal after deal after deal. Your shows never go away. So this behavior becomes reinforced through their success. And you look at a guy like Sean Hannity, and you look at somebody like Rachel Maddow, and they are corrupt to their core. It's just that the general public doesn't know any better. They don't know the backstory. They don't care. They don't have time to explore all of this stuff. And even if they did, they wouldn't know where to look or what they were looking for. But when we come along and we say, hey, listen, you know, these people that are on your nightly news, they're pathological liars. They're paid propagandists. We have a thing called the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act of 2012, which legalized propaganda, which I guarantee none of my friends know about.
Yeah.
Right.
Thanks a lot.
But it's there. And it's like, why is it? It's an interesting phenomenon, and it's definitely true. But why is it that people get personally connected and feel personally attacked when you point out this rather unfortunate fact about their primary news source? They take it personally. It's like an affront on that. You might as well be saying the things to them, you know, and criticizing them, because they get very defensive about that. Why is that? Why do people defend, you know, in these narratives, these managers? I mean, when we were kids, do you remember it was like, you picked who your favorite newscaster was? Like, I like Peter Jennings. Really? Well, I like, I like Tom Brokaw. Tom Brokaw seems like a straight shooter. Like, he's going to give it to me straight. You know, so like, you pick which flavor of this information that you want. You build this brand loyalty to them. Mm-hmm. It never crosses your mind that they might be bullshitting you, which of course they are. I think it's been worse lately than more so than it was when we were kids, but still it was controlled back then. And for what? Why? Why do we build these false associations with these propagandists and get offended when people attack them? I say, do what you need to do. Attack my sources all you want, because what I want are the best sources possible. And so if you find that I've got a flaw in one of my sources, I want to be the first person to hear about it, not the last.
Well, the truth can always withstand questioning, and it should withstand questioning. And Laura Logan, who I think is the quintessential investigative reporter, I mean, you look at her history, that is one bulldog of a woman, war zones. And she is all about, I want to get to the truth. And she says, what you do is you just chip away at the narrative. And what's left standing is generally the truth. You know, I have no problems having my views questioned, because I want to know if I'm wrong. I want to know I'm wrong. And if somebody presents facts that says, nature boy, you're talking shit, then I'll readjust it in a heartbeat. You know, and I also like people who bring the receipts. That's why I like you. And I've always liked your show and your book, the Global Octopus, is because you'll say something that to the normie will sound fucking outrageous. And you're like, oh, you don't believe me now, do you? Well, let me just read a quote from them, or let's look at this article, or let's look at this historic document. And basically what you do is you have a way of hanging themselves with their own words.
Yeah. Yeah. I described it as verbal judo, which was taking the momentum of their words and using it against them.
Good.
And, you know, so like when you hear, you know, when somebody says, well, you guys talk about this new world order, and you guys with your world government theories, and these people, they want to steal all this stuff. My response is, first of all, it's not my new world order. I didn't come up with the term. They came up with the term.
Yes.
I didn't start calling them that. They call themselves that. And the reason why I know they call themselves that is because they talk about it in public on microphones and in front of TV cameras constantly.
Yeah.
It is only hidden to the extent that you don't want to go out and look for it. But if you want to go find 200 instances of George H.W. Bush mentioning the New World Order during his 4 years in office, you can find him.
Oh,
yeah. He was bold about that. So part of this stuff is like, it's just dragging somebody and just saying, just look at this. Just look at this again. Mm-hmm. Look at this statement again. Listen to what they're saying. If, you know, when you accuse David Rockefeller of being a globalist who wants to start a world government, what you would expect is that he would say, that's preposterous. I would never do anything like that. There's no truth to that rumor. And that'd be it. What you find in what I'm able to show the audience, whether it be the people reading the books or the podcast or just people that I'm having a conversation with, what I'm saying is, if you read page 405 of David Rockefeller's autobiography, he gives a full soliloquy about how my family and I have been accused of being internationalist, that we are plotting to control all the governments of the world, to form a world government, they say. They say that we want to do this and that we are using the United Nations as our tool. Now, if these are the charges leveled against me, I stand guilty and I am proud of it.
I have that quote hanging in my office with a picture of him just kind of off to the side of my wall of shame. That exact quote. They blatantly come out and they tell us, right? And that's why I keep trying to tell my friends, right? This is not me, Nature Boy, telling you. They talk about it. They have lectures. They have conventions. They write books about it. They even hold TED Talks about it. And a couple of weeks ago, one of my best friends was over. And, you know, he's like the ultimate skeptic, but he's a really good dude, right? Mm-hmm. And so he's also show me the sources type thing, which I'm going to peeve about when people say that, because it's not, oh, I want to investigate. It's a rhetoric, but another story, different day. And I told him, hey, man, have you ever heard of Klaus Schwab? No. You ever heard of the World Economic Forum? No. And I said, well, if you want to get an understanding of what I'm trying to tell you, just start learning about them. You can go to their website. They have videos of everything that they want to do. They have YouTubes. Start learning about that. And what I've often said is that with all these crazy catastrophes happening right now that seem all disjointed and disconnected, it's like this organic storm that's hitting us. Once you understand the end game of global governments, chaos, order out of chaos, then everything makes sense. Because I have people going, I don't understand. This makes no sense to me. And my reply to them is, it makes complete sense to me. This is all part of plans that have been in existence for at least hundreds of years, with the concepts being millennial. I mean, if you go back and look at Manly P. Hall's Secret Destiny of America, that book, he flat out says it. You know, this group's been around for thousands of years. And they're slowly building their plan for a world government, and they're going to use America as an instrumental part about it. You know, and when you look at the formation of America, how it was 13 individual states that all became one big federalization, right? So you have one big power. You look at the European Union, multiple states, multiple countries all coming together to be one big power. That's kind of the globalist agenda, is they want to consolidate it into 10 major regions, right? With the central power sitting at the very top. And my question has always been, because power, especially global power, you can visualize it as a pyramid. You have a lot of people at the bottom that ain't got squat, that are holding this thing up. Then you got a very few at the top that hold all the power. But the question that I have, right, and this can even get esoteric, is who's that one sitting on the capstone?
Yeah, exactly.
Who's that one bitch? Because it goes to one. It always goes to one. And coming back to, you know, part of the plan that I can see is this global government. And they've talked about it. Heck, people thousands of years ago in different religions talked about it. Okay. So.
Oh, it's not a new concept.
No.
It's just that this is the first time in that we know of in our history. I was going to say first time in recorded history, but I'm thinking, well, our history is a little wonky, but it appears to be the first time in history that we've ever had the technology to actually accomplish something like this. You've seen some of the previous empires, the Mongols and, you know, and the Romans and everyone, you know, and they get to, you know, 11% of the globe, 16% of the globe, 22%, you know, and then things start to sort of grind to a halt. But I think what's different now is that they've given up on the concept of global government. And they've pivoted more to the concept of global governance, which is more like, we're just going to give you guys each the franchises, and we'll be the franchisee at the top. Right. And we'll send out messages. You know how the way McDonald's all look the same everywhere you go, the kind of uniform. That sort of thing. David Icke did a bit about this at Anarchapulco in 2019 when I saw him, where he's talking about it all comes out of the central McDonald's location, you know, in Chicago, right? And they're the ones that set the uniform policy and the arches and the exact amount, and you buy from this supplier and everything. So you can go into a McDonald's anywhere and you're going to get the same experience. You're in a different country. You're doing things a little differently. There's variations in the menu based on where you are geographically, based on what people like in that society. But for the most part, you're in a McDonald's.
Yeah.
And that is a way that these people have decided there's, you know, we could conquer this place. We could try to conquer this place like the British did, and the sun never sets on the British Empire and all that. But God damn it, that is just a lot of work, a lot of bad shit being done, and it's tough to run it. So you could do that, or you could covertly monopolize it through the banking system. And so when you've got these two converging things, when you've got a global governance in the form of what David Rockefeller talks about with the United Nations being the focal point for this, setting policy at the top level. And if you think this can't happen, it's happening with the World Health Organization right now. Over all of the pandemic act is putting them above on the hierarchy, above all of the nations and dictating down to the nations. I mean, that's backdoor world government. It's just not, it doesn't have a flag. I guess it does. It's the United Nations flag or the World Health Organization's flag, but it's not, you know, it's not, you're not looking for it. It's a roundabout way of forming a world government. And so these are the things that you start to pay attention to. So like with your normie friends that you talk to that come over and our skeptics, look, you're starting from a premise. You need to adjust where you're starting from. You are under the assumption that the government is here to help you. And I am operating from the assumption that the government is organized crime. So we start from different places. And so I'm always going to be looking at the scams that they're running because I know that they are organized crime. Whereas my normie friends and yours as well are giving them the benefit of the doubt and saying, oh no, this government cares about me. They need me to continue paying taxes. No, they don't. They fucking despise you. They think that this governing business would go a whole lot better if you didn't exist. I assure you. So one of the things that I have come through in this journey of mine, starting with the octopus of global control in 2017 and getting to kind of where we were, Berwick and I did controlled demolition, talking about how it all comes down. And it's really kind of now moving into a third phase, which I understand works in concert with the world government. And that is depopulation. They are linked together in a very unmistakable way. They go well together. In order to form a world government, it's a lot easier when you have fewer people. And so I think that where we have problems with our normie friends is that they don't understand that who they're dealing with in the government. They think they're dealing with dipshit bureaucrats that are elected and running, you know, hustling to get votes and everything. What they don't realize is that they're dealing with some very sinister Malthusian lunatics that want to depopulate the planet. And so once you sort of understand that, I think you come at all of this information from a different angle than the normies do. And I don't even blame them because I was a normie too. I used to think that the government was like your parents or something, you know what I mean? And then you find that that's not the case. So again, we can bridge these gaps with our friends as long as we understand our friends aren't the enemy. They're just making some assumptions about these people that they shouldn't be making. You need to kind of educate them to the extent that you can without, you know, berating them or anything like that, but just, you know, trying to explain to them, you're viewing these people wrong. They're not altruistic do-gooders looking out for humanity. Mm-hmm. They're bloodthirsty eugenicists that have spent centuries writing about how they can thin out the herd and control this planet. And you need to be aware of them, and you need to take them seriously, and you need to fucking listen to them, because they're telling you what the plan is.
I say that. I've said that a million times. These are very serious people, right? The people
very serious.
And they have brilliant, brilliant people working for them that are master planners and are no bullshit psychopaths. Another thing that I try to explain, because I always hear people, and it's normal. It says, nobody would be that evil, or nobody would ever do that. And my whole thing is, I try to tell them the error that you're doing in your thinking is that you are seeing this through your lens, through the lens of a moral person who has values. Okay. These people are sociopaths and psychopaths, and you have to understand the difference between them. And I tried to explain to them, a sociopath has no empathy. So if a million people got to die to make $1 million, so be it. And them bastards can wipe a million people out, feel justified, have a fat meal, look themselves in the mirror, smile, and get a good night's sleep. Then you have the psychopaths, who are the next step up. They get off on hurting and killing people. And you have to understand, these are the people that we're dealing with. These are severely sick, psychotic motherfuckers, excuse my language, that you're seeing on the world stage. Your Hillary Clintons, your Bill Clintons, your Barack Obama, your Orange Jesuses, Klaus Schwabs. These people are sociopaths at minimum, if not psychopaths. And once you can break through that lens of viewing the world through your lens, things make a lot more sense. And then, too, knowing that they are, seeing them on, the national stage, personally, for me, I can pick them out left and right. Boom, 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 boom. And, that's one of the things that I could hopefully get across to some people. But it's real difficult, because people only want to learn or know what they know to stay in their comfort zone. They don't want to look at anything that contradicts what they've been told, whether it be cognitive dissonance or what. And I've tried to, over the years, offer that. Very rarely, and I have had some friends that actually looked into it, and but the majority of people that I've talked to about it, it's fluoride stare. Yeah. I want to continue listening to my damn talk radio, because I don't want, they're telling me the truth. And as I'm like, oh, talk radio, huh? Oh, you mean brought to you by Pfizer? Hey, brought to you by Kenworth Red Eye Radio. You're never going to get anything that's going to be honest and not propagandized if you've got big money behind you, because if you try to get close to that third rail, you'll be out of there. I mean, you'll be like Rosie O'Donnell on The View. Boom. And then obscured, you'll be kicked off the thing. And then maybe when you've paid your pittance down the road, they'll give you some little cable show in that hardly anybody uses or watches. But basically your ass is kicked out of the club.
Yeah. Yeah, I see. During COVID, I was quick to remind people that the mainstream media gets about 60% of their ad revenue from big pharma. And I would also say that during COVID, I think that was increased considerably. It seems like they paid them even more. So you don't have to be a conspiratorial thinking person. You just have to be a practical person.
Very much.
If you are getting 60%+ of your ad revenue from the pharmaceutical industry, how big of a hurry are you going to be to write a big story exposing the crimes of the pharmaceutical industry? Mm-hmm. It's not going to be high on your list of things to do. You might not prioritize that. And especially during COVID, when we saw all that. So that's not being a conspiracy theorist. That's being somebody that understands business.
Exactly.
And a lot of the people don't know that. So it's like, hey, do you think the news was being 100% truthful when it came to COVID? Because they had a whole lot of money at stake to keep their mouths shut. And you can see how easy it is to purchase a scientist. You can understand how easy it is to purchase a talking head on the news media. I mean, here's the thing. It's like, you know, in that movie, Jerry Maguire, where he has this moment in the middle of the night and writes this manifesto exposing the sports industry for how heartless it is. If Anderson Cooper decides to do that tonight on CNN and expose the vaccine industry and give up his and walk away from his $9 million a year job, there's 100 people in line that'll take it tomorrow and it'll start right back up. So these people already know that it's pointless to go against the system when you're in that system, because they'll just get rid of you. So you can't trust that source of information.
Right.
You can't trust any source of news when there's, I understand advertising. I have a marketing degree. I worked for an ad agency. I understand that advertising can get really
cutthroat, baby doll. Cutthroat.
Cutthroat and disgusting and manipulative and all those things. There's a lot of money at stake. You know, there's, and as long as there's money there, you run the risk of having conflicts of interest in your reporting, lack of reporting. And so what it is you, it may not even be that the media goes out there and lies to your face and runs cover for Big Pharma, even though they did that. It might be as subtle as they just never, ever report on the autism connection to Big Pharma.
Exactly.
And because they don't report on it ever, agreed upon, nobody's ever going to talk about it, then your grandma thinks that there's nothing to this autism vaccine link, because I've never heard anybody on any of the major news stations ever talk about that. And if this was a real thing, surely I would hear about it on my news. So it's a lie by omission,
sure,
which is diabolical. And, you know, so you're getting lied to on the front end about what's going on by the media that has a huge financial stake in this. And then you're being lied to by omission by them not mentioning the things that they should rightly be talking about. So again, it's like, I just encourage people that are in this waking up process to just reevaluate your relationship with your news sources. Like, put them on a month-to-month contract. Like, why am I watching CNN? Why am I watching MSNBC?
Yeah, why am I watching Fox?
Why am I watching Fox? All I'm saying to people is, like, reevaluate that relationship. They lie to you constantly.
Oh, yeah.
About stupid shit, too. Like, stuff that they don't need to lie about, they lie. So they clearly have a problem lying, the media. It's been legalized by Obama. The propaganda has been now legalized since 2013.
Yeah, exactly.
Take that into consideration. And you start to go, fuck, I'm in a very abusive relationship. If you were in a relationship with a person, like the way you're in a relationship with your mainstream media, you would have a restraining order against them.
Yeah, I agree. I take it to a personal level. You know, you're talking about being in a relationship with a sociopath or a narcissist who will flat out gaslight you right in front of your face, tell you that they'll smack you across the face. And when you ask, what the hell did you just smack me for? They'll look you dead in the face as sincere as day as long as says, I didn't hit you. You're crazy. And they'll lie about everything. Well, that's also the mark of a pathological liar. And I've known a few of them. They lie about everything. They lie about shit they don't have to lie about. And
that's when you have a problem. And that's where we are.
And they
that's
know
where we are with our media.
And what's screwed up is they know they're lying. Well, some of them do, other ones don't. But they know, you know, they're lying. But they have no moral consequence and they keep lying even more.
It's the Solzhenitsyn quote about what? They're lying. We know they're lying. They know that we know that they're lying. They know that we know. But here they keep lying. Yeah, that's where we are. And it's a dangerous place to be, because you feel like, on the one hand, they don't respect you enough to even give you a good lie anymore. Remember the good old days when they actually gave a shit and they tried to like craft their propaganda to be like, way more deceptive and everything. And now you feel like you're getting the junior varsity team and you're like, God, this sucks. Like you guys don't even have the budget anymore to like pull off. Like you have Patriot Front walking up and down the street, you know, marching the feds with the masks and everything. You go, you look at this and you go, honestly, aren't you embarrassed for yourselves? Exactly. This operation is so fucking laughable. Like I'm embarrassed on your behalf. It's so bad.
Yeah, exactly. It's just government fronts. And I mean, live in a time of deceit, and to be able to see this deceit and have everybody else with their blinders on and their fluoride stare just walking into the fucking meat grinder and telling me and people like you, right, that we're fucking crazy, right? And then
I wish
shut up. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. Right. You see that line that all y'all going down and going into that meat grinder that says free government cheese, social equity, right? I'm going to go over here and I'm just going to let y'all do what you're going to do. Because one thing I've learned, I used to think years ago, I'm going to wake up the world and all this. Yeah, I gave up on that. Now I'm pretty much like, if you want to know, I'll have a conversation with you. I'll be honest about what I view. If you want to find sources, I'll help you get sources. But if you don't want to know, as the old Thin Lizzy song says, forget it. You know, that's the point that I've come to. And I'm kind of like, you know, if somebody's dumb enough to snort glass, right? And I try to tell them that that's not coke, that's glass. And it's going to like really fuck you up. And they tell me to go get screwed and they put that thing up their nose. I'll throw them a fucking razor blade. Here you go. And walk away. Because you done did it to yourself, people. You done did it to yourself. Hey, speaking of that, there's a subject that has really interested me since, and we talked about earlier about the Pritzker family from your podcast a few weeks ago. Really intrigued me because it's one of those hidden hand families. So I did some research on them today, right? Looking at them. Man, you talk about trying to obscure everything as much as they can about them that's just negative. Or anything about them. And the Wikipedia page is barely existent. And yet their influence, when you find out, even on Wikipedia, since the Forbes started the top 50 or 100 richest families in the world, the 50, they've been in it. They've been rated at the 10th richest family in the world. They have massive influence on our world today, right? The governor of Illinois is a Pritzker. Right. And yet I just recently started learning about that shortly before your podcast. And there's one that really interests me. And I don't know why my shows always end up coming back to this, but the tranny that's being thrust upon us as a society. Right. But me, I'm like, I don't care if you're an adult and you're over 18 and that's your bliss. I say, follow your bliss with my blessing. I'm cool with it.
Yeah. Me too. That's how I feel. Do what you need to do, but
yeah, keep the kids out of it. And this stuff that's going is directed towards the kids. I always ask the question, hey, how come those drag queens that are in lingerie never go to the old folks home? How come they always want to go to the kindergarten?
Yeah. That's it's a fascinating thing. And the Pritzker family is deeply involved in that.
They're one
of the main drivers of it. This is a Chicago deep state Jewish mafia family, and the grandpa got his start as the Chicago outfit's attorney, and he was the clean face of dirty business, as they call that. That's why I named my episode that. And they used him as a cutout to run and front these operations that the Chicago mob was behind. And from that, he was, of course, a lawyer representing them. He was a Harvard lawyer. And from that, he started a law firm and grew that into a pretty decent sized portfolio of real estate and companies in the Chicago area. But his kids took it to the next level. And they're some of the ones that... that have been running the family for the last 35 years or so, some pretty well-known names. And they were the ones that started a lot of the big, big businesses that we know. So this family owns the Hyatt Hotel chain. They own Royal Caribbean Cruise Line. They own the TransUnion Credit Bureau. They own a company called the Marmon Group, which nobody really hears that name and thinks anything of it. They that group, that company owns a portfolio of companies that make really super boring mechanical wrenches and industrial products and rail lines and copper, you know, whatever. They make all kinds of really boring shit that you need. And they own all kinds of things. So that one company alone, this Marmon Group, represents 50% of their wealth. They sold this company to Berkshire Hathaway for $4.6 billion for 60% of it a couple years ago. So Warren Buffett got involved. They owned the Superior Bank of Chicago. They owned McCall's Magazine. They used to own Braniff Airlines. They're players. And what happened is, everything was good for a long, long time, and they were known as a family that, for whatever reason, like when you start talking about them, the term would come up that they were offshore trust. They were known for their reliance and dependence on these offshore trusts that had been set up a million years ago and were grandfathered in. And the shit that was grandfathered in is totally illegal money laundering, tax evasion right now. Like, you can't do any of it. And their stuff is all offshore in these trusts. And so it's very murky, but it doesn't matter, right? Because it's the family and they're just managing their own stuff. And so, you know, this goes along for 50 years and it's not a big deal. And they're never paying taxes and they're deeply involved in politics. And then they get into a fight. And somebody could, because some of them are working harder than the others. There's a couple of them that went to go become yoga instructors and shit, you know? So, and then there's others that were like, I'm going to take this money and try to run the world. You know? So like there was some people, some of them had like crazy ass ambition, like Jay Pritzker. And some of them had no ambition, like one of the sisters who literally moved to fucking Nepal and did nothing. Right. But the ones that got involved are shitheads.
Yeah.
And they started stealing from each other. And they started stealing from each other's trusts, and they started moving corporations into new LLCs that were formed in these still offshore trusts, but then in the mother-in-law's name. And it turns out that one of the Pritzkers stole four companies from the main conglomerate. And everyone's like, what the fuck are you doing? You're stealing companies? I guess when you got all this money. So anyway, so there's infighting there, and they decide we're breaking up. We're breaking up the Pritzker family. And this is the reason why everybody knows that there's 11 of them, is because they went through this big, massive lawsuit. And the judge decided that they were splitting it up into 11 equal shares, each share being worth $1.4 billion. And this was in 2001. So it was 11 of them, and they all got the same amount of money. Now, from that point, some of them have teamed up and have made like a shitload more money. So now this family all in is worth, if you were to take them all, add them all up, they're worth about $33 billion.
Oh, holy shit. That's a lot of power you can wield. A lot of back behind the scenes power you can wield with that much money.
This is the type of shit that where you have to get suspicious of these people, because you look, when you start to get into this oligarch frame, mm-hmm. Rockefellers, Carnegies, Bill Gates, you start looking for things that don't have price tags, like the education system. You start looking to buy things that aren't for sale.
Kids.
Like like injecting your ideology into this, and you have one of the Pritzker men becomes a woman in his 40s. And now is the largest financier of the trans movement.
One person.
So now you've got a war chest of $33 billion and an ideology with at least one of these people who's worth over $1 billion, this being Jennifer.
Is Jennifer married? And is Jennifer straight or is Jennifer gay?
I don't know. I didn't know there was going to be math on this
there's
this interview.
A quiz, damn it. You didn't know that? Where's my pencil, baby? Give me a piece of paper to write on.
I've got, okay. So James, leader of the DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, component of the Pritzker family is James Pritzker, but you can call him Jennifer, right? He's a she. Financing the trans movement, financing the hospitals that do the transition surgeries.
Yeah.
That's big, a big money. One.
Becoming bigger.
Big money. Big. They're spending the money. They're making sure that it gets taken care of. James was in the military and is massively behind the DEI agenda inside the U.S. military, the diversity, all the trans soldiers that we've been seeing. That's the Pritzkers.
Yeah, I'm a vet. And I've always said that the Army is not a social experiment, but all these people try to make it a social experiment. They don't realize the Army is there to kill, maim, destroy. That's it. And you need some tough sons of bitches doing it. If you have a bunch of mamby-pamby little men, women, or little pussies, what's
going to get everybody killed?
Yeah, what are they going to do? Throw their bra at some guy coming out with a fucking gun, or sit there in a foxhole and cry and lose their fucking shit?
No, this is not working. This is an intentional destruction. And what I'm saying is that the Pritzker family is part of this intentional destruction. They're part of this Marxist ideology. Mm-hmm. The financier, the first major financier of Barack Obama were the Pritzkers. So if you understand Barack the Destroyer and what he did to America and how he came out of that Chicago Mafia era,
yes,
that's Pritzker money. That's Saul Alinsky. That's Hillary Clinton. That's Michelle and Barack Obama. That's the Pritzkers. That's who put them there. Barack Obama is not the president without the Pritzkers. That's how deep these people are in this. And so you've got that. You've got the trans movement. And this James, now Jennifer Pritzker, has $1.9 billion to play with. That's a lot of money. Finance a lot of trans surgeries with that. Or you can leverage your connections with your brother, J.B. Pritzker, who's the governor of Illinois. You could push for state and federal mandates for money to finance trans surgeries. And what did we just see? With the military, that they want 161,000 trans soldiers to be able to have sex changes? Gee, I wonder who is behind that. I'll tell you exactly who it was. Jennifer Pritzker.
Wow. Talk about hidden hand wielding a lot of power. A lot of power. Because, I mean, the money that it must take to... Well, power. Let's just call it power, because money is just nothing but a tool of power. The power that one must amass to have this influence in our society in a relatively short time. I mean, this trans is infiltrating everything. Everything.
It's so crazy too.
Yeah.
Because like you and I are like, you know, we're of the same era. Like I grew up in Palm Springs, California, which is like
the gay capital of California.
One of the gayest places in the world, right? It's like Laguna Beach, Palm Springs, West Hollywood, San Francisco, right? I think this is like the gay Mecca, right? So I grew up around that and it was no big deal, you know? Yeah. It was just not a big deal. I mean, it might have been like funny, like when you'd see a gay bar and it would be named something like Daddy Warbucks, you'd be like, holy shit, like it would be funny. But there was no hate.
No.
There was no animosity. There was no us versus them. It just kind of coexisted. And as I grew up there, you know, you meet gay people, you have interactions with them. Everyone was totally cool, man. I never had any problem with it. But it seems that lately, once they started adding a bunch of alphabets to the end of that thing,
yeah,
that things got weird. And that feels very engineered to me.
It feels
like social engineering. And it's got the fingerprints of these fuckers all over it.
Yeah.
The Pritzkers and what they're into.
Well, look, I mean, it's even infiltrated religious organizations. I went to a Sunday service a year or two ago at this little church. I have a friend that went to it. And it was put on by the youth group, who was an LGBTQ++ youth group in coordination with another one. I walked into this church and I saw almost as much trans and gay symbology as I did Christian iconography. And then these kids got up there and they all got up and had to say, oh, my pronouns are they, them, right? So they took turns, you know. Every one of them, Charlie, was an activist speech. There was nothing about the Lord Jesus Christ in them, except maybe a little reference. It was activism, 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 trans activism, trans activism. We're this, we're that. You need to accept us, and you need to completely conform your way of living and thinking to accommodate us, our mental illnesses. You know, they might have taken off the DSM, but it was on the DSM, so I'm going to refer to it as a freaking mental illness. And these people, like what you're saying about gay people, I've had gay friends all my life, right? Nobody gave a rat's ass. They did try to push their lifestyle on me, and I didn't push mine on them. We all got good, you know? And now this whole ideology seems to be shifting towards social engineering and control, 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 control. And that's where I draw the line, is I don't give a rat's ass how you want to live your life. Just where I draw the line is when you try to take your ideas and force feed them down my throat and compel me to act and talk in specific ways so you don't get offended.
No, we're not doing that.
No. No.
That's dumb. We've decided we're not participating in that nonsense. You know, I feel it's part of the demoralization of a nation, you know. And I went down this rabbit hole about with these Yuri Bezmenov interviews, trying to find these old ones, you know, because you see him with Ed Griffin, and then I found a couple where he was doing presentations, and you could tell it was like 1982 or something. And you listen to it, and it's so great because the clothing and the quality of the film really puts it in the proper context, because it makes it feel like it really was 40 years ago when he was saying this stuff. Mm-hmm. And he's talking about that process of how long it takes for demoralization to set in, and how long you need a 25-year window. You need 5 years for the destruction, you know, and you're like doing the math. You're like 20. Okay, wait, that's 82, 92, 2002, 2000. Oh shit, we're here already. You know what I mean? And you then listen to Bezmenov's speeches, not as this thing that's going to happen sometime in the future, a million years from now, but instead it's like, this is what's coming tomorrow. Yep. You hear him talk about, like, and then they take you and they put you up against the wall and they shoot you, and you're like, holy shit. Like, I could totally see them doing that to this new batch. I've got an episode coming out tomorrow called American Brown Shirts, where I go through that sort of like connection between the current trans Antifa group, yep. You know, the destabilizers, the German brown shirts of the early 20s, and that, and how that rise to power was, and how it's matching some of these similarities. And what I point out to them, if they would listen, which they won't, is that it ends exactly the way Yuri Bezmenov says it ends, with you up against the wall getting shot because you're no longer useful to the agenda anymore. And once the revolution or once the revolutionary powers take control, they don't want destabilizers.
No, they don't.
You're a liability now. You're not an asset. You're a liability. You go up against the wall, you get shot. So what I'm trying to say to these people is, don't be useful idiots right now, because it ends badly for you too.
Well, it does. I read a really good book called In the Garden of the Beasts. Have you ever heard of it?
I've heard of it, but I don't know who wrote it.
It was the ambassador. It was from the writings of the ambassador to Germany and his daughter. And he served the last 10 years before the start of World War II. And it chronicles when they got there and that slow incremental rise of the Nazi power. And one of them was the brown shirts. They did that. When it's just a couple of them here acting a fool and this and that, then there's a few more. Then it starts to get more. Then the cops start turning a blind eye to them. Then they start getting accepted as normal. They think they're all that. We're going to take over Germany. We're going to be this. And then the Night of the Long Knives came out, right? And we all know the story of that. That's when they rounded every one of them up and they literally put them up against the wall and they shot the fuckers, including Rom, the leader of it, because, they're not needed. And guess what? They're starting to become a liability to the power structure of Nazi Germany for me at the time. It's like that with Hitler. It's like that with Mao. It's like that with Stalin. It's like that with Pol Pot. You know, history, like Mark Twain says, history might not repeat itself, but damn, it sure does rhyme. It certainly does.
And when you get these bloodthirsty dictators, they follow very similar patterns. And so you see these things developing in advance. So I'm concerned.
I'm too. I'm very concerned.
I'm concerned. I'm concerned about, I don't know. I know it doesn't take 51% of the population to be aware of what's going on for things to change. I know that the stats are a little bit more in our favor and say it only takes like maybe 3 or 4% of the general public to be aware. But I feel like we have got to get people aware to what's happening as quickly as possible, because we're getting to a point where our money's about to change, with the central bank digital currencies. And I think a lot of people are going to get caught off guard with that, thinking that like, oh, it's just crypto. It's just like Bitcoin or whatever. And it's not, and maybe fall into this trap of getting into a central bank digital currency and not understanding the ramifications of that and feeling like the jail cell door slams shut behind you the minute you accept that. You know what I mean? And I feel like I'm worried that's in our future, and it shouldn't be if people understand how bad that can go and will go. Then I think people would do what they did in Nigeria, which is just completely reject it. And I hope that's what America does. I hope we're able to be loud enough. But boy, man, I don't know how much faith I have in people being aware of these banking scams.
I think that there's very few people who are even aware of the CBDCs. I've told friends about it and they have no clue. And they don't even know that it exists, let alone what the concept is. To where they can restrict your spending down to a granular level, right? For example, I know I'm preaching to the choir with you, but this is just for the listeners out there that aren't familiar with it. They can say, well, nature boy, you've exceeded your carbon credit limits. So, we believe in your health because health costs us everything. And we noticed that you bought an extra six pack last week. So you're restricted for six packs. And also because we think you have a drinking problem, we're going to restrict access to your card. We're going to put you on temporary, restrictions. So we're going to limit your access to 5 miles within your house. And you can only buy this, this, and this on this day. And at the end of the month, if you don't spend all of your allotted credits, well, then it just gets reset and you get your new dose of universal basic income. And that, to me, Charlie, is one of the things that scares me the most about what I see on the horizon. Because, you know, when you go back to, not to be religious, but you look at the prophecies in the Bible, Daniel and Revelations, they talk exactly about this in reference to the mark of the beast. At least no man shall sell, at least he have the mark of the beast, right? That fits the definition of that statement right there. Whether it's a physical mark or whatever, you're not going to be able to buy or sell unless you are a willing participant in the new cashless society, which most likely is going to come with a little oath that you're going to have to sign on the bottom line to get part of it. That's just going to say, oh, yeah, by the way, you just signed your soul away to eternal hell and damnation, you know, but hey, you didn't read the small print. Here's your CBC. Go in and feed your hungry family because the economy's been collapsed for so long. Have a good life, gentlemen. Have a good life. Yeah, it's
what they dream of. It's what these lunatics fantasize about, is that we're all going to get on the CBDC. We're going to walk into this digital prison.
Right.
And it'll be over for us. And if we accept that, it will be. So it's, you know, I can envision a scenario in which they say, look, they've done something recently that makes me very suspicious. They have legalized bail-ins for banks.
America.
Yeah. Ooh. And so you understand from previous times when the government does things like this, and when the industries make these whopping and unusual changes in advance and start legalizing things that shouldn't be legal, you know that it's coming.
Yeah.
Right. And so I can envision a scenario as a sort of kickstart to a transition into a CBDC future, which I hope does not happen. But I could see them, in order to try and make it happen and get a good uptake,
right?
They will, when the banking system finally falls apart and the banks are able to take the money in your accounts because they've legalized bail-ins, they're going to have to offer you some sort of solution, because this is legalized. You can't sue them. It's happening. When they want the money, it's done. They take it. It's good luck. You're third position. You're an unsecured creditor in your bank account, and they just legalized it. So you're fucked. You're not getting your money back. FDIC has 2% of all money on deposit, and they've got that 2% invested in bonds that are upside down. You're not getting your money back. If there's a banking collapse, everybody's fucked. Okay. What I'm saying is that the offer could be, we've got these CBDCs. I mean, we'll just give them to you. How much did you have in your account? Oh, you had 14,900. Okay, well, we'll just give you that. And CBDCs, we're just really kind of moving to this anyway, so start spending it. It's like EBT. It's like welfare, but you can control it like EBT as well. Like you can't buy cigarettes or alcohol with your welfare, with your
EBT card,
food stamps. You know, they used to, now it's called EBT card. You can't, there's certain parameters, there's certain things you can't buy with it, but for the most part, you can buy just groceries and things like that. So like a programmable central bank digital currency isn't a feature, isn't like a bug, right? It's not like, oh no, it's weird that they can program it. No. They're going to track every single thing you do.
Yes, everything.
And all of, because for two reasons. One, because they want to watch what you're doing. And two, because you create data everywhere you do it and they can sell it. That's very valuable. So they'll track all your money. The idea of anonymous purchases go away. They like that. They like the idea of knowing what you're doing with it. So this is we have to absolutely positively reject a central bank digital currency. It has to be the hill to die on, because if you allow programmable money that these motherfuckers can set to expire every 90 days on a whim, you'll never own nothing. Like Klaus Schwab says, you'll never be able to save for anything. You can't buy a car. You can never save enough for your car. It's constantly sand running out of the hourglass. You know what I mean? Get to spending. Start buying a bunch of shit you don't need, but you can never really get ahead. You're just treading water forever. That's what they want. They want that. And then special allowances to the people that play ball, you know, like carrot or the stick, you know? So this is a very, very dangerous path that we're heading down. And that's why I'm really glad that we'll be at Anarchapulco. You'll get to hear all the crypto guys talking about some of the solutions that they have for these problems that are being created. You're going to hear from some really interesting people there that have thoughts and maybe even projects that are solving some of these problems.
That's one thing I'm looking forward to, is going down to Anarchapulco so I can learn some of these alternative things. Because I'm like you, I am not going to go on the CBDCs, you know. Hopefully I'm not going to be, hopefully I can survive and aren't one of the ones that get taken out, you know. Yeah. But I think that all of us need to keep going, even though it seems like, me personally, sometimes I feel like I'm battling an uphill battle. I said that wrong, but I think you get my point. But at the same time, I know that I can't give up, no matter how much it may seem that we're lost and we're defeated, because there's still a part in me that says good's going to prevail in the long run. Now, we're going to go through a lot of hell. Yeah. It's going to be very difficult, but ultimately, my altruistic sense says eventually we'll get through this and that good will prevail.
And there will be plenty of opportunities to.
Yeah, exactly. You just have to know,
for people that are paying attention, for people that are seeing what's going on. And maybe listen, the first opportunity is moving yourself out of the way. If you can see that we've got a huge banking problem going on, and you recognize it, you trust what you're seeing, you say, yeah, it doesn't look good to me either. And you go, well, what should I do? Well, maybe I should get my money out of the bank. Maybe I should get gold and silver. Maybe I should, and I'm not licensed to give financial advice, so don't listen to me. But I'm just saying, you know, maybe you start thinking about it a little bit differently if you know that they've legalized bail-ins and you take your money out.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to talking with Tony Arterburn. He's going to be down there.
Yeah.
On the side.
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe he can educate, have a little conversation, because that very much interests me, is that, you know, to take a section of one's assets, maybe not all of them, but take at least a section for an insurance policy, if you will, and convert those into precious metals. Because it was explained to me one time, I forgot where I heard it, but it was the value that gold holds. And they says, back in the Greek days, an ounce of gold, a Greek coin, could buy you a toga, a nice hat, and a nice pair of shoes. Today, that very same ounce of gold, that coin, will buy you a three-piece suit and some really nice shiny suit. So as an insurance policy, that's what I think is prudent, but I don't know anything about it. And unless I know something about it, I've learned financially, I don't do it, because I usually end up shooting myself in the foot. When everyone's saying, dude, that's a bad deal, oh, I know what I'm doing, inevitably, they usually turn out to be right.
I just think of it like this. I am just changing the structure of my money. I'm transmogrifying it from Federal Reserve notes into silver coins. Yeah. And I can always change it back if I want to. It's but true. For the time being, I feel a little bit more comfortable like that. And I know a lot of people do. And I know a lot of people have questions about how to buy gold and buy silver and why you do it. Listen, if nothing else, I think it's like, you think of it like an insurance policy. I'm pretty sure it's not going to go to nothing.
It never
happened. I can't say the same about the dollar. You know what I mean? I mean, I think the dollar will probably be fine for a while. But I mean, you know, if you've got gold, and listen, as Catherine Austin Fitz says, you always have to have a gold coin
For the guard.
In case you need to bribe the border guard.
Yeah, I love that saying. Always keep a gold coin for the guard.
So, like, don't kid yourself. I just think it's the most reasonable, logical way to approach that stuff. You know, you've got uncertainty with some of these currencies, and you've got more certainty in I think silver is super undervalued. Yeah, I know the big banks have been busted manipulating the silver market. I mean, they've been found guilty of felonies for doing it. So we know there's massive price manipulation going on there. So, like, who even knows what it's really worth? But it's worth peace of mind for people. Yeah. That's sort of the unquantifiable part of owning precious metals. It's that it's, you know, that you've at least got something tangible that's worth
right.
something that you could put in your pockets and get the fuck out with.
Yeah,
and exactly. I think for some people that is worth a lot.
Well,
it's
my mom.
Just nice to have it. Just in case. And if times were normal and if everything was cool and super duper boring, it might not be a big deal. But man, look around. Everything yeah. feels totally crazy right now. So, like, if now isn't the time to have some gold and silver, man, then good luck to you.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know what? This show has flown by. So let's stick a fork in this bad boy. First of all, I want to thank you for coming on. I've always
Thanks
liked your show. I like your spirit. I've learned a lot about you doing this.
Like my anger, dude, my frustration.
Indignation.
I think people thing. Connect with it. I think people connect. I have people come up say to me, like, yeah, man. When I feel it's like my inner Alex Jones coming out, you know, where I feel like I just want to scream a little bit. I think a lot of people feel like they want to scream. And
so.
It's been a really frustrating last couple of years to live through. And I think we're entitled to feel like we want to scream a little bit. Like, these fucking people, it's like you guys are going to get us all killed.
Yes.
You know what I mean? You know, have you ever been with a group of people where there's one yes. stupid guy and you're like, yes. dude, you are going to get us all into a fight. Shut your mouth. You know
yeah.
what I mean? Like, that's kind of how it feels right now. Like, everybody be cool. Let's get through 2024. We've got an election. We've got the Olympics. We've got insanity. Like be cool, man. That's my attitude going for the rest of the year. And I'm so excited to see you in Mexico.
Oh,
we're going to have a great time, whatever, you know, whatever adventure happens in Mexico, it is at an Acapulco. It's always one for the books.
Well,
you'll have a great time and you'll be around like-minded people. And I think you'll probably leave feeling the same way I feel, which is re-energized. You'll know that the world it's pretty messed up, but there's also some really smart people out there that have some brilliant ideas for how to fix it. And so I always leave feeling inspired, and I hope you do too.
I'm sure I will. Hey, by the way, I'm looking forward to drinking a little bit of tequila and some good Mexican beer over there at Max's bar afterwards. And even during it. So first round's on me when I see you. I don't know if you do day drinking, but you can at least do a beer with me, my brother.
I will absolutely. Well, I've got, yeah, we'll have some beers out in the sun. I'm excited. And probably at night too.
Well, then tell everybody where you can be found. Let her enlightened everybody.
Well, I have a new website, macroaggressions.io. That has everything about the podcasts. There's a couple of them, the books, there's a couple of those. And if you want to follow me on Twitter at macroaggressions, and my channels now are Rumble. I'm a little late to the Rumble party, but so far so good. It seems to be okay. So Rumble and Rockfin are the best places to find me, and the new website, macroaggressions.io. I guess somebody has .com. How dare they?
What a douchebag.
Please give it to me.
No, they're going to sell it to you for $5.
Sell it to me.
I know those scumbags. Well, everybody out there, I hope you really enjoyed the show. You learned a little bit from it. If not, well, you got to tune in the next one and learn a little bit more. I'm really hoping that you like my content. And if you don't, hate listeners are welcome. So if you hate it, get all your friends together, have a fucking hate party. Just boost my numbers. Everybody, if you're on Rumble, please subscribe to my channel and help me boost the numbers. It helps me in the algorithms. I have a new Naughty by Nature with Nature Boy Twitter account, X account, and that is at Nature Boy NBN, as in Naughty by Nature. That's at Nature Boy NBN, Naughty by Nature. Also, every Friday night, the show is an encore presentation on the new Prisoners at DMP's Rumble channel. So check it out. If you like it, leave me a comment. If you hate it, leave me a comment. I appreciate everybody out there. I appreciate the community. So at that, I'm just going to say party on, Wayne. Party on, Garth. And have yourself a fantastic day.